Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
It's been a while, but we finally have our first shipment of quack into Hamsterdam. How's it feel to be back, Sean?
It feels amazing. We've had a brief hiatus here, but it's finally game week for football again. It's Alamo Bowl game week.
Yeah, and it's not like anyone would have listened like last week when it was Christmas.
Yeah.
Unless you really just wanted to get away from your family.
You know, we could have supplied a getaway from that, but the quack would have been weak. We had to save it.
Yeah. There was, like, no basketball either. There was, like, a game December 21st and stuff, but figured we'd just save it for the last podcast of the college football season. So, do you just want to jump right into that?
Let's dive right into it.
All
right,
so Oregon is playing TCU in the Alamo Bowl. This is the same bowl game that Oregon traveled to when we beat Texas on Mack Brown's last game as head coach in a contest that was the blowout that just wouldn't happen. Distinctly remember that game, like, watching the two teams play at one time being, it's only 21-3, because those teams were miles apart.
Yeah.
So what's different about this upcoming game is this is not necessarily like a disappointing year. I mean, this isn't a lackluster TCU team. The real theme going into this is what could have been. Oregon obviously lost Vernon Adams with no real backup quarterbacks, and dropped a couple games. Although the Utah one was going to happen regardless.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's kind of the theme of, and I think that'll kind of be what makes this game so intriguing is, you know, it's a matchup of two teams of, like, what could have been for both of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's, you look at Oregon's losses and it's like, yeah, the Utah loss was going to happen no matter what. That was just,
that was bad.
That was a blowout. But, you know, Michigan State obviously could have gone either way. Washington State could have gone either way. And so if you replace those, just swing those two losses the other way, and suddenly you've got a one-loss team. And, you know, maybe they go to the playoff. Maybe they do, maybe they don't, but they at least go to the Rose Bowl. But instead, they're going to the Alamo Bowl instead. But I think it's different than the last time the Ducks were in the Alamo Bowl. I mean, I remember that game, and it was just like, I think everyone was just kind of pretending to try and get excited about it. When it really, because that was, what, the first year since, like, 2008 that we weren't in a then BCS bowl game. But I think this year is a little bit, I think it's going to be a much better matchup against TCU. And TCU obviously is, that's another case of, like, oh, what could have been with TCU, because they were on the track towards the playoff before things kind of derailed for themselves too. So, so it'll be kind of an interesting matchup of who's going to kind of quote unquote salvage the season and end on a high note.
Yeah, I mean, this is really the most compelling non-like big bowl game. Like, Fiesta Bowl, like those are always the ones that people look at as being like the prime games.
Yeah.
But it's going to be way more exciting than Stanford, Iowa. Like, the only reason I'm really going to watch that game, well, A, it's college football. B, it's the Rose Bowl, which is like the most fun game to watch.
It's like you're an American, you watch the Rose Bowl, that's what you do.
Yeah. Like Army, Navy, and Rose Bowl. Like, those are the few games you have to watch.
Yeah, I think this will be probably the most exciting, most entertaining game outside of the playoff.
Uh-huh. For sure. Yeah, I'm psyched. So, I did some writing yesterday looking at the quarterback matchups. Both teams have great quarterbacks coming in. Vernon Adams, who really is one of those guys now where people will just love him because of what could have been, like Dennis Dixon,
mm-hmm.
or like Colt McCoy at Texas when he got hurt, and then they've just kind of spiraled since then.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. Like, everyone's just gonna like love him forever. Yeah. Meanwhile, Darren Thomas can't get a fair shake to save his life. And Trevon Boykin, oh my god, I'm so sorry to any TCU fan that's listening right now. He sat out a couple games, although kind of precautionary. He threw 65%, 9 yards in an attempt, 31 touchdowns, 10 interceptions. But he also ran for 612 yards on 123 carries. 9 touchdowns, which is a lot.
Yeah,
he's
kind of one of those. He's one of those dual threat guys. He had, I mean, I'm looking back at some of their games. He puts up a lot of big numbers. I mean, I'm just looking at. Let's see, when they lost to Oklahoma State, he threw the ball almost 60 times. 445 yards, but that was a bad day for him. 1 touchdown and 4 picks. But aside from that, and I mean, you got against Texas, he threw for 332 yards, 5 touchdowns, no picks. Texas Tech, 485 yards, 4 touchdowns, no picks. He's something. Good. Yeah, he's a very talented quarterback. But I was just looking at the TCU football homepage, and they are going to be without Josh Doctson, who's one of their top receivers.
That was huge when I saw that come across.
Yeah, so that's. I mean, that could be an X factor. He had 1,327 receiving yards and 14 touchdowns this year.
Just heads and tails above everybody else.
Yeah, it's he had before he. So from the I'm looking at his stats from the year, from September 19th against SMU until the Oklahoma State game on November 7th, he had just touchdown reception wise, he went 2 touchdowns, 3 touchdowns, 2, 2, 2, 2. So he went on this string of games where he was catching 2 to 3 touchdowns every single time he went out there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Texas Tech, he had 267 receiving yards. He had almost 200 against Iowa State and West Virginia. Like, that's a huge blow.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And it's just, like, it's also huge because of the people below him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Colby Listenby, Kevontae Turpin. Like, they have, like, really long touchdown. That's one of the things that stands out is Kevontae is just, like, a burner. He's, like, 5'9", 165 on their roster, which means he really weighs, like, 150. kind of like Charles Nelson. Like Charles Nelson's lifted at like 170 or something. I mean, it really, yeah, like 155.
It's like here's how much you would weigh if we packed you up for to go hiking on Everest expedition, and that's going to be your media guide weight.
Right. Yeah, that's huge, because Arian Springs was probably going to have his hands full with Josh Doctson, but now everybody, I think every matchup is manageable now.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. I mean, when I just kind of look at the surface of this TCU team, you know, rushing game, receiving game, you've got the very clear go-to guys. You've got Aaron Green on the ground, who ran for over 1,000 yards, and you have Josh Doctson, who had twice as many yards as the next guy behind him. And so when there's that, you know, when you're missing a guy in that receiving core, I mean, that totally changes the game. And it'll be interesting to see kind of who steps up, or if their, you know, game plan changes a little bit. He didn't play the last couple games of the regular season. I'm really curious to see. I think they lost to Oklahoma by like 1 point.
Yeah.
And I would have been really curious to see if, had he been in that game, if they would have won, you know, where would they be instead with at a one loss team?
Yeah, you know what's funny about that game? They went for two at the very end with like 50 seconds left.
Mm-hmm.
I remember they did that. They went out for two, and I was like, I love it when teams do this.
They're just going for the win.
Yeah, just we're gonna figure this out right now.
Bold strategy,
guys. I love it, especially because they were on the road too. So it's like,
yeah, I really do enjoy it when coaches are just like, no, we're not going to overtime. We're either gonna end this right now. We're either gonna win or we're gonna lose. And that's one of those things where like those situations. People think you're an idiot if it doesn't work, but people think you're a genius if it does work.
Yeah, the story of Scott Frost play calling.
Yeah, and Scott Frost play calling in a nutshell.
Yeah. Man, that guy just... We just love hating on our coordinators as a fan base.
I can't remember... You know, just looking back at all the coordinators with everyone ripping into Scott Frost and his play calling, and all the times that we chanted, you know, fire Aliotti from the student section, and, you know, the third and Pelham situations, and, oh, man, we need a coordinator we can love. But that wouldn't be right.
Yeah, nobody on offense is going to get the benefit of the doubt after Chip Kelly. Nobody on defense is going to get the benefit of the doubt after 1 year of Nick Aliotti having an exceptional defense.
Oh, man. Was that like 2012 when the defense was just like the star of the team that year?
Yeah.
They had shut out Arizona, and that was a good team.
Yeah, it was... Yeah, yeah. Ignore the fact that like our defense is entirely three-star athletes.
Yeah,
going up against like guys with five-star and four-star guys on offense.
Mm-hmm.
But whatever. Kermit sipping tea. But I think. Oh, here's the thing. Here's the note I had written down for TCU. They were just decimated by injuries on defense.
Mm-hmm.
Like going into the year, that's one of the things I thought was most impressive, was how many returning starters they had back on defense. But they just got rocked. Like the Texas Tech game, I remember watching this game like at Autzen and how close it was. They had the game-winning play was Trevon Boykin throwing it to receiver across the middle in the end zone, like at the very front of the end zone.
Mm-hmm.
It being played very well by the Red Raider defense. gets tipped up, and a TCU receiver makes an amazing catch in the back of the end zone. Like, just barely got a foot in. It was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
In that game, which then won 55-52, granted, Texas Tech's offense is like its thing. Like, they're probably going to score points regardless, but TCU was down, like, I think 6 or 7 starters that game on defense. Like, all their their linebackers were having to go deep on their roster.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think that's why we had the Texas Tech 52 points scored. Kansas State scored 45. That's why those games are pretty lopsided. And then against Kansas, they were down Trevon Boykin, and they just could not put together a win at all. Or they did win, but it's Kansas. Like, that was bad.
Yeah. Are you seeing this game? Is it going to be a shootout in your mind, or is it going to be something else?
I doubt it's going to be a shootout, just because there's such a long layoff.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, it's with a lot of these teams, where they have, like, two amazing offenses coming in, and then mm-hmm. nobody scores points. Like the national championship game against Auburn, when both teams were scoring like 40 points a game.
Right, and it just turned into a stalemate.
Yeah, and then there was like 35 points total scored. Granted, Nick Fairley was just like, oh God, I have nightmares of him just tackling the running back and quarterback in the backfield at the same time.
Yeah, and those types of games are, I think, you know, like that national title game, the Stanford loss from 2012, I think, like, those just, like, low-scoring games where, you know, neither team is breaking 20. It's just so, I think it's so frustrating to watch as, like, a fan base of a team that we're so used to just seeing us put up points routinely.
Yeah.
And even if, like, the defense is playing great, it's still just so frustrating because, like, you think you're going to score so easily, but it's just not going to happen.
Right. But,
so.
But Sean, it's not that they're playing great defense. It's that Scott Frost is calling the wrong plays.
If he could just call the right plays, I mean, damn those fades to the end zone.
It's not that hard. I play Madden all the time. It's not that hard.
Oh, man. I really like to think that that's how easy play calling is in college football. You just sit up there in the coach's box with your PS4 controller and shuffle through the plays.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
I want to see a game where the two teams have to use the playbook from NFL Blitz.
Oh, yeah, for there's like just 20 routes going on at the same time.
Yeah.
Just two linemen and just 30 receivers running around.
Pandemonium and chaos, and on third and long, every play you have to run da bomb.
How did that game ever get made?
I read a article on it that was like really interesting, and if you have time, you should look it up. It's essentially like asking that question, like,
who
how
wrote
did
it? Or what website?
Let me look it up real quick because it's this amazing. How did NFL Blitz ever get made?
Especially with the concussion stuff, is it Vice Sports?
Yeah, okay. It was Vice Sports. It says, how the hell did NFL Blitz ever get made? And it goes into this, like, it's a pretty long story, but it goes into, like, the whole production of the game and... They, you know, they had to get the NFL to, like, sign off on it and license it.
As always, yeah.
Yeah, and they had a meeting with the NFL, and they showed them the scenes from the game, and the NFL was just like, absolutely not. We are wiping our hands clean of this game.
But then they gave permission.
I think what they did is they toned, like, it was supposed to be even more violent initially.
Oh, God.
So, yeah, so the, I guess what happened is, when they were originally making the game, like, there would be a very long period where it would just turn into, like, a massive one-way brawl. And they cut it down to, like, 3 seconds or something. So they essentially, like, made the time frame in which you could unleash on your opponent. Like, they made it a little bit shorter.
Oh, yeah.
And I forget how they got it, like, signed off in the end, because obviously, like, it's real NFL teams with real NFL players. But I think that was the takeaway of it. I think they just kind of, like, honed it down a little bit, but not by much.
Which means the NFL Players Association gave the okay, too.
Mm-hmm.
That's so weird. That never gets me. That's like, they would show that today, and they'd just be like, GTFO, yeah. Just get the fuck out of here.
Oh, here's... here's how it happened. They said they wanted the league wanted them to send a video of all the motion captured moves before launch, and rather than sending a gameplay video, they sent all the animations as depicted in an editor tool, which only shows the outline of a motion capture figure moving against a dark dimensionless background. So without any context, the over-the-top hits and tackles were neutered. It says the NFL either didn't have a problem with it or never saw or watched the tape because they never said anything again.
And that's the NFL's fault for not being like, actually, we need to see this whole thing. Because the NFL easily could have been like, no, send us everything.
Yeah.
Or this doesn't get made. And they obviously didn't.
Yeah. One more NFL tangent here. If you haven't seen Concussion yet, you should go see it. It's a phenomenal movie, probably one of Will Smith's best roles ever. And
he has a deep accent.
Yeah, because he plays like a doctor from Nigeria or something, I think.
Yeah, Dr. Omalu.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, the actors in it are fantastic. Alec Baldwin is in it. He's awesome.
Eric Badrin.
And... you know, I did the most American thing possible. This weekend, I went to go see Concussion on Saturday night. And then Sunday afternoon...
Sunday.
Nice. Sunday afternoon, I spent my money and went to an NFL football game and cheered bone-crushing hits. And
was it weird watching football after seeing Concussion?
Dude, it actually totally changed the way I watched that game. Because, like, every time there was, like, a helmet-to-helmet hit, I was just thinking about, like, everything they talked about in the movie.
Yeah.
So it was... I didn't think it would, like, impact my view of the NFL, and I think, like, long-term it probably won't. I mean, football is football.
Yeah, in a few weeks you'll forget.
Yeah, exactly. But if you watch Concussion and then you, like, immediately go watch live football, it kind of makes you think a bit.
Yeah. Like, I've been following all that stuff. Like, I read... I was always pretty aware. Like, I followed the legal case and everything behind it. And just, like, with my own experiences with, like, concussions and everything, like, I'm just, like, so interested in all this research and everything. Red League of Denial 2 years ago when that came out. And the documentary on Netflix, which I think is... way better than probably the movie will be.
Mm-hmm.
Or than the movie is. Fun fact, though, I have a friend who works with not Omalu's concussion group, but the other one. The one in Boston.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so for those who don't know, there was, like, another group. Omalu was, like, the first guy to discover it. And then there was a second group started by, like, an NFL player. I forget the name of it. And then they got, like, the other group got the backing from the NFL to do, like, a lot of the research, and then suggested that people send their brains to the group in Boston. So ever since then, the group in Boston has kind of been, like, the preeminent faction leading the concussion charge, and Omalu's kind of been, like, placed off to the side. So... the history behind those two groups is actually fascinating,
mm-hmm.
but my friend had a lot of critical things to say about Omalu and his, like, newer research. So it's kind of weird hearing, like, him, like, the long-term hero of this story.
Right.
So, But yeah, it's been that whole thing where the NFL for years was like, no, this isn't a problem. And yeah. So I highly recommend you actually watch League of Denial on Netflix. But there was a part two where there's like all these unprecedented moves in like the medical field where the NFL pressured like scientific journals to pull and retract the research about concussions in football players, which is like unheard of unless someone is just blatantly lying. And so basically the NFL bullied everybody into discrediting Omalu.
Yeah, and that was essentially like that was kind of the big plot line in the movie was, you know, the NFL was gonna, you know, they were pressuring him, he had to, you know, they wanted to discredit his work, they wanted him to say he made it all up, if it's like as accurate as possible as it was in the movie, I think that Omalu's big edge was like he was just this doctor who like he didn't know anything about football. He didn't care.
Yeah,
he didn't know what the NFL was. And so I think like not knowing what he went up against was probably a big advantage for him. The last comment I'll make about the movie is maybe you already know, but guess who they got to play Roger Goodell?
Oh, I already know, but keep going.
Luke Wilson.
Yeah.
I was just like, what? Like, you guys could have tried a little bit harder.
Baldwin should have been Goodell.
Yeah. Like, they got a guy to play Paul Tagliabue for, like, the one scene he's in. It was like, all right, he kind of looks like the guy. It's like Luke Wilson and Roger Goodell don't even look like there's nothing even remotely close about that.
Maybe it's a backhanded joke, like you're a comedian, like we don't take you seriously.
I really hope so.
Yeah, I don't think I'll watch the movie. I think I'll see it when it's on like Netflix or something.
Yeah.
So tell the truth. That's one of the things that
tell the truth. Yeah,
that's one of the things that always stands out to me. So, all right, back to the Alamo Bowl after one of our very rare tangents.
It's not slinging quack without a tangent.
Yeah. So a couple things that I think is promising. Well, Boykin's like running threat is absolutely terrifying. Remember when Vernon Adams went down and we were just like, maybe we should just switch Braylon Addison to quarterback.
Right.
Boykin is like, if we had actually done that in an off season, because Boykin switched from wide receiver to quarterback. He's probably going to be a wide receiver in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
But he made the move, killing it. Like, he has elite athleticism. He actually looks a lot like Braylon Addison when he's playing.
Yeah.
And they both wear number two. So the threat of his running ability is what scares me the most. So one of the things that you hear from like other Pac-12 coaches that remain anonymous and they tell these things to like college sports writers and everything is how much teams had a game plan for Marcus Mariota's running, and how they don't have that this year, so it makes it a lot easier to game plan. And Oregon is definitely going to have those same problems preparing for Boykin.
Yeah.
Like, you can't have, like, defensive ends get high, like, when they're rushing the passer, because that leaves a lot of, like, huge holes where Boykin can escape out. Like, it's like when you, it was like Mississippi State when they played Auburn in 2010. Like, one of the reasons they did so well is that they didn't let the defensive ends get high. They didn't shoot their DNs high, and so there was really nowhere for Cam Newton to go to. Like, you may have, like, a half second more time, but he's not going to be able to extend the play like 5 seconds or use his running to get point or to get yards. So that's one thing that's terrifying. And I think the Horned Frogs being short, their best receiver is going to be huge. What's most promising to me, I think, is there isn't one guy on the defensive line who is just an absolute destroyer of worlds.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause that's the one thing, if there's just like an absolute stud, like in the front seven. Like that was really what happened, like the Stanford years, the Stanford losses. I think he's had fantastic front sevens. I don't think TCU has a fantastic front seven. There was like Nick Fairley, or there was Joey Bosa, on Ohio State's team.
Mm-hmm.
And TCU just doesn't have that. So I think that's a huge plus for our running attack.
Yeah, Royce Freeman just quietly having one of the biggest seasons on the ground. He has 1,700 yards, and we're not even into the bowl game yet.
That's ridiculous. How many touchdowns does he have?
14.
Oh, so he's not going to break Michael James' record.
I think he only needs like 99 yards to get the single season rushing record.
I feel like he should be able to get that.
Yeah. There was two games this year where he ran for less than 100 yards. One of them was Utah when he had 14 carries for 77 yards, and the other was Michigan State where he had 24 carries for 92 yards.
Yeah.
Every other game, 180, 101, 163, 246, 138, 110, 180. Like, good Lord, man.
Yeah, he's 19.
And we get, you know, we get two more years of this guy.
I think one.
You think he'll go to the NFL early?
I think he should. Unless he's going to be like a third rounder.
Yeah.
Because it's running backs.
It's that whole shelf life thing.
Yeah, running backs' careers are... Yeah, they only have like a certain number of carries, and they should not burn those in college unless they have to.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think we'll see him go pro. I at least, if he isn't a first or second round, maybe even a third round, if he's not graded second or third, because running backs just don't go in the first round anymore.
Mm-hmm.
If he is a second or third round player, like for sure, like a top 5-6 running back, which I think is doable, then I think he should go pro.
Yeah. I think he'll have to, you know, he'll obviously have to like kind of replicate this season as much as he can next year to get up into that kind of second round projection, but
and he's got to be a much better receiver.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this
we saw real moments, like in the USC game. He motioned out wide and just shook a Trojan in the second, just shook a Trojan for like a 30-yard fade route.
Yeah.
So I think you should go pro.
Yeah, I think he'll. He'll be the kind of X factor in this Alamo Bowl.
Yeah, I'm so excited to see Darren Carrington too again.
He's always open.
I don't know how he gets open all the time.
Yeah,
it's just, and there's it's just baffled. I don't understand. He's always open.
I think we just like titled a Quack Fix one day like Darren Carrington is still open.
Yeah, I just don't understand how he's always open.
Yeah, and it'll be, if you haven't seen it, there's a pretty cool thing. Darren Carrington is going to change his number for the Alamo Bowl to honor his late friend, I think, from high school. I think he's going to wear number 20. Yeah, he's going to wear number 22 to honor, let's see.
Like his best high school friend.
Yeah, it's Markel Bird. He was killed in a single car accident while driving home for break. He was 20 when he died. So he's going to wear his the number 22 to honor him. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
It's kind of like that one year where all the Oregon players cycled through
Doxie's
number.
29? Yeah, it was 29.
Mm-hmm.
That was in 2007 or 8. I think it was 2008.
I think it was 2008. Yeah, because he died in the summer of 2008.
Right.
So I think it was that following season they did it.
So is there anything we haven't touched on yet on this game?
I think we've covered it all as far as the Alamo Bowl goes.
Yeah, we had a huge spot in between where we got off track.
We at least kept it football related, but we did a little NFL blitz / concussion tangent.
Yeah. All right. Basketball.
Basketball.
Oregon lost to UNLV on December 4th, 80-69. Gave up some big runs to UNLV. So there were times where we were like down 15, almost 20 points. And then it was really an insurmountable lead at that point to try and claw back. Like we got back within a couple points and then totally.
It was kind of one of those things where Oregon kind of surged back into it and then just ran out of gas at the end. That was a tough game. That was our first loss of the season, right?
That was
the
first loss.
Yeah. It always seems like there's a couple non-conference games that they drop. The big thing from that one was when it was Tyler Dorsey who went down, right, with like that injury that looked way worse than it actually turned out to be.
Oh yeah
it was like, okay, I remember getting a text from my friend, he's like, well, season's over.
Yeah,
and then he like came back in all Paul Pierce like, and then Oregon went on a run.
Yeah. Paul Pierce, that's the game is still so funny.
But I think, isn't Dylan Ennis joining the team soon?
Yes.
Isn't he supposed to play?
Yeah, he should be back soon.
Yeah, I think he's like back for like, he'll be good to go for like Pac-12 play. So I think that'll, hopefully that kind of makes an impact. But yeah, so scheduling wise, we've got, let's see. Tonight, Tuesday, December 29th, a 6 p.m. matchup against Western Oregon.
Nice. It's going to be competitive.
Can tune into that one on Pac-12 networks. And mm-hmm. then Sunday, we kick off conference play. I like how we kick off conference play every year with the Civil War. That seems right.
Do we? Is it really every year?
It's every year.
Interesting.
I'd have to go back to see like when the last time we didn't open against Oregon State was. And it's always like, you know, kind of first weekend of the new year or first few days of the new year. So yeah, we'll do.
Keep going, sorry.
So first few games, we've got Oregon State at Corvallis and then Cal and Stanford and Eugene, and then we have to do the mountain trip to Utah and Colorado.
Fantastic. Good news. Jordan Bell is back.
Love That's big. Him. Blocking the, machine.
The young T-Rob from the Blazers a year ago. Who's no longer with the Blazers, but at the same time, they were both just blocking the hell out of everything. So.
Yeah, Jordan Bell has... He's made some of the more emphatic blocks I've ever seen before.
Dylan Brooks has so far been the leading scorer. He's played a ton of minutes, too. Him and Elgin Cook have been playing a ton.
Yeah. Brooks, I'm just like looking over the stat sheet. Brooks is averaging almost 34 minutes a game, 16 and a half points. Cook's up there too, 31 minutes a game.
Yeah, one of the guys who really stands out to me, especially when Oregon's making runs and everything, is Dwayne Benjamin.
Yeah.
I'm surprised his stats don't match what I'm watching, because he's like plays under the rim, but yet he hits a ton of threes, I feel like.
Yeah, he's like a 3-point machine.
Yeah. Yeah, he has 19 3-pointers. Tyler Dorsey is only above him with 22.
You know what the return of Pac-12 basketball means? It means that we get Bill Walton back.
Yes.
Who just Dwayne Benjamin pops out for the three. Snoop Dogg.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And he's just like, I remember on a broadcast once, he was like having to explain himself. He was like, doesn't he look like Snoop Dogg?
Of course.
It's like, oh, Bill Walton, you are America's true treasure.
So my friend was at a Grateful Dead concert, and he stood next to Bill Walton.
Bill Walton is the guy at a concert that you do not want to be behind.
Exactly. Like I know there's like when I'm like 5'10", and whenever there's someone that's like 6 foot or taller, I'm just like, oh man, this is problematic.
Yeah,
Bill Walton is just so
I took a picture of Bill Walton once, and there's not many pictures that exist in this world where I look short because I'm 6'4".
Oh yeah,
but like standing next to him. Because he's, what, 6'10", at least?
And he's even gotten a little shorter because of his back surgeries and everything, I think.
Yeah, it's a very bizarre feeling to, like, stand next to someone when you're 6'4", and feel incredibly short. Oh, man.
I took a photo with him, and it was, like, I look at it, and I'm just like, oh, my God.
Yeah, you are a tall man.
Yeah, and he had said he was, like, he will just... Someone asks him a question, and he'll spend, like, 3 minutes actually answering it.
Yeah.
And then 27 minutes just doing whatever he wants, or doing whatever else he wants to talk about. And it all flows, like, in a very logical way. It's mm-hmm. like, there's this. Oh, yeah, and then this is a fun fact about that. And then this also gives context. And then the story behind that part is. But then 30 minutes later, he's talking about, like... Someone asked him about what it was like to, like, move from the Blazers to the Clippers, and he's now talking about how he picked, like, a greatest hits album out for the Grateful Dead. It's like, how did we get here? I saw him, he was doing, like, a Pac-12 tour with the Pac-12, he was doing, like, a tour with the Pac-12 network, mm-hmm. where he would, like, call a basketball game, like, do a meet and greet the next day at the school, and then travel by bus to the next one.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, the Pac-12, like, handlers or whatever were, like, it was scheduled to go an hour and a half. It went 2.5 hours.
Jesus.
And at the hour mark, they're like, all right, we got like 30 minutes left. And then at like an hour 30, they were like, we need to wrap up.
Mm-hmm.
Bill Walton does what he wants. Like, he did not care at all about what these people had to say. He just loves answering people's questions. Like, he gets a lot of hate sometimes for like his quote unquote shtick or whatever. he's like one of the nicest guys of all time. Like, answered like everybody's questions. He's great. He just likes people.
Yeah, it'll be that's the thing I'm looking forward to most about Pac-12 basketball being back, is the return of Bill Walton.
Asking people if they've ever been to a volcano.
He's like, the Valley of Fire, the land of volcanic eruptions. It's like,
yeah, that's the only place.
Oh man.
One of my friends does the most amazing Bill Walton impressions. A literal cathedral of basketball. That's one of my favorites. A literal cathedral. So great. I love everything about Bill Walton.
It's good stuff.
It's not even like, see, people are like, oh, I hate watching it. It's like, I will turn on games that I don't even care about.
Right, just to listen to Bill Walton.
Like, I may just have it as background noise and just hear Bill Walton talk about nothing to do with the game. Yeah, have you ever been to a volcano line was peak Bill Walton.
Yeah. I'll need to put this out on Twitter again, but there's you can play Bill Walton bingo during games.
Oh wow.
Yeah. There's stuff such as throw it down, big man. Any Grateful Dead lyrics. This is a good one. Quote, it's Dave, right? John Wooden, Good Time in Boulder, Shane Battier, Are You Old Enough to Remember? National Parks. It's a treasure.
That's so funny. That's so funny. I should do that for HBO boxing broadcasts, since that's one of my things. One of the things is Max Kellerman always compares somebody to Pernell Whitaker, who's like a famous fighter, but like kind of obscure for any like kind of casual boxing or sports fan. I was like, he's like Pernell Whitaker. Like, everybody has some facet of his game that's like Pernell Whitaker. That would be like the free space. So, like Bill Walton doing. I feel like all those bingos, it's just all that matters is the order in which it comes. Like, all of those are going to hit at some point throughout the game. And if he talks about going to a Grateful Dead concert, you just finish your drink right there.
Yeah. The stories.
All right. Any closing comments?
No closing comments. It's football is going to come to a graceful end this weekend, and we'll sit back and enjoy the playoff and wait for next fall again. But I'm feeling good about the Alamo Bowl. I think it'll be close, but I think we'll come out on top, and it's going to be a good game.
Yeah. Oh, I also told some friends who don't always watch Oregon football, and a couple of my family members who had never seen this, but our ball boy who has the big hair and everything, I forget his name. I forget his name off the top of my head. He's the ball boy with big hair. And he's got the blonde patch on it.
I'm blanking on his real name, but he's fondly known as Chocolate Thunder, I think.
Chocolate Thunder.
Or is it? Let's see. Oregon ball boy. Because I remember
Kwame Mitchell.
Kwame Mitchell, that's right.
Because ESPN did an article about him.
Yeah. That was like his peak popularity.
Yeah, and in October, he dyed his hair pink.
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah, I don't think we can post this photo on SB Nation because we don't have the rights to it. But there's a photo of him. Oh, I love this photo. It's one of my favorites. One of my favorite photos of all time. It's against Michigan State in 20... Oh, this is last year. Michigan State last year. And it's Royce Freeman on, I think it's one of his touchdown runs, is just like flying down the sidelines. It would think it was like the fourth and goal or whatever that finished, or the fourth and like four from like our 30 that kind of iced the game. And you see Royce Freeman just like barreling down the sideline, and every duck is just like celebrating on the side, on the sideline and everything. And Scott Frost has his hand in the air. And then right behind Royce Freeman is Kwame Mitchell. And he is sprinting. And the angle of his body and, like, just, like, you can tell just by his stride at that point that he is flying down the field, too. He's, like, there's times where a player, like, a big play, and you can see Kwame Mitchell following the ball through the air, like, the entire time, like Forrest Gump. And as soon as, like, the play ends, he is handing the ref the ball already. Like, the play ends, the guy hasn't even gotten up yet, and Kwame Mitchell just has the ball in front of the ref.
Yeah.
Like, in his gut. Like, he's doing a handoff. It's fantastic. I love it.
And, it's, like, very, like, it's very, he does his job, you know, it's very, like, kind of that unsung hero type of thing, but he's actually a big part of the offense. Like, if he doesn't move and he doesn't get that ball, like, the offense doesn't roll as quickly.
Right.
So it's a whole rhythm thing, so.
And he is so good at it.
Right.
And you can tell because every, like, you never, like, see him.
Like, you never see him, but he's always there.
Yeah, you never see him, quote-unquote, working.
Yeah.
Like, he's there at the beginning of every play, like, next to the ref. And then he just magically appears next to the ref on the next play. And it's just like a lightning bolt. It's just like...
It reminds me... it reminds me... have you ever seen Mr. Deeds?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Unfortunately,
and like the
yes.
servant or the servant or whatever. He's like, I'm very, very sneaky, sir.
Unfortunately, I have seen that movie multiple times. Yeah, Kwame Mitchell's the best. He is so good. He's so funny. I'll send you the link and maybe we can just hyperlink to it, because I know we can't.
Yeah,
we can't post it on SB Nation. Yeah, that photo's so good though. I love it. Yeah, so if the camera's pointing to the Oregon sideline, you will for sure see him at work, and it's fantastic. It's fantastic. Oh, I see a mashup of Wiz Khalifa next to Kwame Mitchell when Wiz Khalifa had part of his hair like dyed blonde or whatever.
Nice.
So, I mean, it'll be really easy to catch Kwame because he has the huge hair that's multicolored. It's fantastic. I actually don't even watch the game. Just watch Kwame.
Just watch Kwame.
Just watch Kwame. All right, that'll do it for us. We got a lot of basketball the rest of the way after this weekend.
Yep.
What is, this is an important question, what's your prediction?
I'm going to go, let's see here. I'm going to go 35... 35-31 Oregon. Royce Freeman will be my game MVP.
Okay, are you ready for this?
Yep.
I think it's going to be 24-20 TCU.
Oh. Straight fire.
I think that Trevon Boykin is just, I think he's just too big of a threat.
Yeah.
I just think that our defense is really going to struggle with him.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really what it comes down to. Because their defense has shown up in games. So their defense has done really well in the Big 12. So, oh, speaking of, so Baylor, this is just another fun fact I heard. So Baylor has no more quarterbacks. They are legitimately out of quarterbacks. Bryce Petty got injured. The backup got injured. His backup got injured. So now they have a legit Wildcat quarterback. He only runs the ball and will throw it occasionally, like 5 times.
Mm-hmm.
Guess his name.
I'm blanking. You gotta... Let's hear it.
It's like a cat. Like a wild cat.
Like a bobcat or like a...
It's... It doesn't
like a
have...
lynx?
Yes. Yes. His name is Lynx Hawthorne.
That's amazing.
Do you want... More amazing, and I'm not making this up, his brother's name is Bricks.
Nice.
But it's not B-R-I-C-K-S.
Is it spelled with an X?
Lynx is L-Y-N-X. Bricks is B-R-I-X.
Nice.
X. There are two X's.
Oh my god.
There are two X's. It's Lynx Hawthorne's brother. He has two X's in his name.
Oh, that's amazing.
That's fantastic. That's my favorite name in college football. Actually, I think... Yeah, so Bricks Hawthorne is a safety for the Texas State Bobcats. Maybe Lynx Hawthorne should have gone to the Bobcats. God, his parents are the real MVP.
Great name. Great name.
So fantastic. Both of those names are so great.
So... shameless plugs as we close out. We'll have some good game preview coverage all week leading up, and then be sure to also check out TCU's side of the blog, Frogs of War, just a fantastic name. I've been reading through a couple of their previews, and they got some good stuff over there too. So
yeah. Oh, my quarterback article's up. Read that. Boykin the Terrifying and Adams the Escape Artist. 10 out of 10. Would recommend. Wrote it late last night.
It's live on the site. It's on Facebook. It's on Twitter. It's all over.
Yeah.
Get in some reading. Be educated about the game. And it should be a good one.
Games are a lot more fun when you know what's going on.
They really are.
Yeah. So, I'm excited. All right, well, that'll do it for us at Hamsterdam. We went an hour. This is a lot of quack.
It was a lot of quack. We had to catch up on some quack.
Yeah, so brief turn down with winter break and Oregon athletics basically on hiatus except for basketball. But, yeah, it's great. Oh, and the receivers coach, Lubbock, is the offensive coordinator.
There we go.
Totally forgot to even talk about that. Yeah, so he's the offensive coordinator. And I think he will be next year. He'll be the offensive coordinator next year. So, all right. Well, that'll do it for us at Hamsterdam. Thank you for stopping by. And we will see you guys again next week.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.